Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Topp. I lost 135 pounds and drastically improved my whole family's health adopting a paleo lifestyle. My husband Matt, who happens to be the producer of this podcast, and I blog our recipes, successes, and struggles at paleoparents.com. Matt and I have authored two cookbooks, Eat Like a Dinosaur, a family-friendly recipe and guidebook for kids, and the upcoming Beyond Bacon, which is a paleo recipe book respecting the whole hog, nose to tail, due out in hardback July 2nd, 2013. We have a passion for family-friendly meals that are practical, affordable, and sustainable to the earth, as well as our long-term health.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne. I was a scientist before becoming a full-time stay-at-home mom and the blogger behind thepaleomom.com. I'm also the author of the upcoming book, The Paleo Approach, available for pre-order now off Amazon and due out September 28th, 2013. Both my blog and The Paleo Approach are heavily focused on the autoimmune protocol. I also blog about the practical application of the paleo diet and share wonderful recipes.
Next up, News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh my gosh, I'm so whiny right now. I got my lady thing going on, and it's raining, and I was exposed to three separate vomiting children over the long weekend.
Oh,
and I think I'm fighting something.
Do you know, my kids, they didn't get it at the same time. They got it like a month apart, but both of them, and I'm assuming it's the same stomach bug that's going around. They were both sick for like 3 hours, and that was it. And that particular bug, like, hospitalized another kid for 5 days in my oldest kid's class.
Jeez.
So my kids were both, like, my oldest threw up once at school, came home, laid out on the couch for 2 hours, asked for some food, ate some food, and then was fine. And then my youngest, this was like 2 weeks ago, woke up in the middle of the night, like, threw up, you know, three times in a row, went back to sleep, woke up in the morning starving, and was fine. So I'm, like, crediting good food. So I'm just saying, chill. Relax.
Yeah, totally. I'm going to chill and relax. I just had a 20-minute power nap before we got on for the podcast.
Sweet.
And I came home because I had told Matt that I wasn't feeling well. And I came home, and there was a giant pot of stew that he'd made with heart. So
I love heart.
Getting my organ meats and my bone broths, and got a little extra sleep. Gonna try to recover the body a bit, but mostly it's just me being whiny.
Well, so rain can do that too. And then
also
fighting something. And
the friend that I talked about a couple of weeks ago that was pregnant for the baby shower that I almost forgot about, mm-hmm, had her baby. And it's so cute.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so cute.
I had a friend let me hold, and her baby's like a toddler, but he's really small. And he reached for me, and then he just like melted into my shoulder.
Oh, you can borrow Wesley anytime you want. I'm talking about a newborn.
Oh, no, it's not the same. Yeah.
I know. I'm talking about, like, a nursling with a squishy face and soft skin. Yeah, that still smells and a little fuzzy hair. Can you tell? I have female problems. I don't even want another baby, and I want that baby.
Yeah.
So
I understand 100%. So you're whiny, so...
Yeah.
I'll try and compensate with extra bubbly. I don't know if I have extra bubbly to bring today. But I did spend like 5 hours outside today, which is like normally this time of year, that's what I would do. But because the book has been taking so much attention, that's been really unusual for me. And I haven't spent anywhere near that much time outside in like 8 months. And so I'm getting my melatonin spike a little bit early. Which I kind of realized like around 4 o'clock, oh, we're recording tonight.
Yep.
when I came home and I put on my pajamas and I climbed into Matt was like, I climbed into bed and Matt was like, yeah, you have a podcast tonight. And then you started texting me, can we do it early? And I was like, no way, I'm taking a nap first.
You get to have a nap and I'll be good for about half an hour.
Perfect. Let's power through. What are we doing? What's this topic?
We've got a collection of questions that are sort of tricky kids' nutrition questions, I guess, is kind of the theme. So they're sort of dealing with picky eaters and food sensitivities and basically worries about nutrition. So I kind of thought they would be sort of fun ones for us to talk about today. We haven't done kind of like a kids' show in a while. I feel like it's been a while.
Yeah, I feel like people think we always talk about kids, but really, we don't.
But really, we always talk about autoimmune protocol.
I know.
We love it. Send us your questions. We'll answer them all. It's good. It's good.
All right, cool. So you're going to get tricky, tricky in science?
I don't even know what that means.
You never? That's like a song. You know what? You're always calling me out of my jokes. Soup to nuts is totally a thing.
Everybody gets them, and I totally don't. And it just shows how like not cool I am.
All right. Well, I just want to state for the record that soup to nuts was wiki-able for Monica, and Matt texted me as he QA'd the show, and he was like, "That's totally a thing." Sarah should have known what that was. So
they should have known. Can you tell me again what it was?
Like, it just means everything, all encompassing. It doesn't have some Civil War era reference I can point you to.
All right. I will understand it next time. I don't know if I can use it though.
That's fine. You don't have to use it. And tricky, tricky is some like 80s song. And if Matt were here, he would be yelling at me that I don't remember like who it is or what it's from, but we use it all the time. So when you said that these were tricky questions, that's what came to my mind.
Especially uncool in the 80s.
You were especially uncool in the 80s.
I was especially...
You weren't old enough to be classified as uncool.
I played classical violin growing up. So when like other people were like listening to the radio, I was practicing violin for like 3 or 4 hours when I got home from school. So.
Snorting and pushing your glasses up your nose and...
Pretty much, except I didn't wear glasses back then. But yes, no, all of this geekiness that I have now, it didn't just magically appear. I honed my geekiness skills from a very young age.
I married into geekdom. We've talked about this before. So I, in fact, did enjoy Puffy Paint and New Kids on the Block in the 80s, unlike you, violent girl.
I did know who New Kids on the Block were.
Oh my gosh. I'm so sad for you right now.
I had my priorities. So it was by choice.
All right, wait. I have a couple of business things that we need to rectify before we move on to science.
Rectify.
First of which is that we've been getting a lot of questions about the bonus show.
I've been getting them too.
So I'll just clarify for everyone, because it's Matt and I's fault. We looked into it, and iTunes lets you tell them how much you want to charge for your show. Turns out iTunes also has veto power over what they believe your show should cost. And because of the length of that show, iTunes decided that it was an album and not a song, and they're charging accordingly. There's nothing we can do about that. We actually asked iTunes to take down the so-called album, I don't know, like 2 weeks ago, Sarah? A long time.
Yeah, because
we've been wanting it to go away so that we could just tell people it's done, it's over, you can't get it. However, because people have been purchasing it, iTunes won't take it down. So iTunes pretty much has complete control over the bonus podcast.
People have been buying it?
Yeah, a couple people have bought it.
Well, you guys are very, very sweet. I hope you felt it was worth it.
I know. I feel terribly because we never intended it to be
$9.99. It was supposed to be a $10 product.
Yes. So, with that said, if you are looking for the show and would like to pay the agreed upon price of 99 cents, please, yeah, we'll put a link in the show notes to CD Baby. That is the only place that is hosting it right now at 99 cents. We are looking into things like Amazon and stuff like that, that would perhaps consider it. And, you know, you could do whatever you've got going on with your MP3s and stuff there. But we don't want the same situation to happen. So we're extensively researching and making sure before we embark upon any new journeys, that it's the right choice for us. And we will have this figured out before we do any more bonus podcasts, because it's been frustrating, to say the least. So if you did purchase the $9.99 album, like Sarah said, thank you. But at the same time, don't do that, because it's only 99 cents on CD Baby. And if you're doing it out of convenience and your love for us, because you want to just give us money, that's great. But frankly, you could send us $9.99 over PayPal and we'd get way more for it, because iTunes takes, I think, like 60%. So you're really giving $6 to iTunes and $4 to us, which, hey, I'm not complaining about $4, but I don't want you to have to spend more of your money than you need to. So,
yeah. I mean, it was a good bonus podcast, but
it's an excellent show. And I hope everyone who has purchased it, the feedback I've gotten from everyone is that they really enjoyed the show. So
yeah, I've heard that too, that people have just been really, like, awed and enjoyed it. And yeah.
Yes. So the other matter is that I haven't reminded people, I think, in a couple of weeks, that leaving reviews in iTunes really helps us out. So if you're listening to this right now, you probably have your podcast app up on your smartphone or your, you know, tablet or your laptop or whatever. If you can go into iTunes and just click on the stars or leave us a little review there, we would so greatly appreciate it. It's not just for us, but helps iTunes determine which shows they should recommend to their other people looking for shows in their top lists, and popular and listen to this now, all those kinds of, like, you know, top lists.
And
whatever.
There's so much on iTunes nowadays compared to the way it used to be. So it's really the only way that people find anything is looking at those top lists in the first, you know, couple page of new and noteworthy and stuff like that.
Yeah, totally. So that's my business.
All right. That sounded like good business.
Okay.
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys.
So today's Science with Sarah is actually a question, but it was the kind of question that I felt was just a really good Science with Sarah topic. And I've done this before, where I've turned questions into Science with Sarah topics. The question was actually from Katie, Texas. And Katie wrote, "My daughter has stopped drinking milk, not due to paleo, but she has said that it upsets her stomach. I am a little concerned about her calcium intake, which I know can be easily obtained from vegetables. But what should I focus on getting her to eat? Green leafy vegetables?" And I just thought that talking about non-dairy calcium sources was a really good Science with Sarah topic. Now, we've talked about dairy being not as nutritionally dense as other foods in a paleo diet before. We talked about that on our dairy show. And we've also talked about vitamins and minerals that are really, really important for bone health. Stacey, do you remember what show that was? That was with Liz Wolf.
Bone health.
No. We talked about it. Actually, it was our skin and hair show with Liz Wolf.
That makes sense.
But we talked about, we ended up sort of expanding that topic into vitamins and minerals that were just sort of important for structural health. So that kind of included bone health. So when you're talking about calcium, I mean, that's usually when we're talking about kids and calcium, that's typically the concern, is that they need calcium as their bones grow. They also need a variety of other minerals and vitamins for bone health. But we live under this idea that the reason why we drink milk is for the calcium, and it can lead to the misconception that there aren't other calcium-rich foods out there. So what I wanted to do today was just list some of the other great sources of calcium. So let's start with how much calcium is in a glass of milk. A glass of milk has about 300 milligrams of calcium in one cup. Like, it's an 8-ounce glass. That's a tall glass of milk. And typical sort of daily recommended intake of calcium is different for different age groups and different genders. It maxes out at 1,300 milligrams per day, and that would be adolescent women, women of childbearing age, and postmenopausal women, and people over the age of 70. That's sort of the top level. So that's what, 4 1/3 glasses of milk throughout a day, and so just to compare, you know, 300 milligrams in a tall glass of milk, in half a cup of cooked collard greens, which a half a cup serving of collards, I would think is a fairly small serving of collards, has 210 milligrams. A half cup serving of cooked kale has 205 milligrams. A half cup serving of bok choy has 190 milligrams. So this means that just by having some of these green vegetables on your plate with your dinner is, you know, if you have 3/4 cup, which is kind of, you know, a handful really of green vegetables, that's the same as a glass of milk. And in fact, there's a large number of vegetables that are really good sources of calcium, specifically the sort of dark leafy cruciferous vegetables. So collards, kale, watercress, arugula, turnip greens, a lot of other dark leafy greens. So like dandelion greens, and vegetables of the allium family. So leeks are really high. Spring onions, like green onions, are really high. Garlic, I mean, granted, you don't normally eat a cup of garlic, but a cup of garlic has like the same amount of calcium as a cup of milk. Yeah, no, not many people are just going to sit and plow through a cup of garlic. Somebody might.
You're getting weird now.
Sorry. Let's just rein it in. And even some of root vegetables that you might be used to eating, like rutabagas, are a pretty good source of calcium. And of course, fish, seafood, is a fairly good source of calcium. Most fish will have between 30 and 80 milligrams per 4-ounce serving. Caviar is extremely high in calcium. And of course, sardines and salmon canned with the bones, because you're eating also bone, are extremely high in calcium. So a like 2.5 ounce serving of sardines is about the same as a glass of milk. So that's about a can drained. And a 4-ounce serving of salmon, which depending on the size of can you get, it's about a can, is also about the same as a glass of milk. So there are tons of great sources, and those are all the richest sources. Basically, there is calcium in fruits and vegetables. There's calcium in nuts. Almonds have 93 milligrams of calcium in 1/4 cup of almonds. Sesame seeds have 51 milligrams of calcium in 1 tablespoon. So just throwing a tablespoon of sesame seeds over your vegetables is going to increase your calcium intake. Oranges have 52 milligrams of calcium per orange. Mushrooms have calcium. So it actually is really, really easy. If you are eating a paleo diet and you're eating some fish and some fruits and vegetables, it is really easy to hit those targets for calcium intake. And what's great about getting your calcium from fruits and vegetables is, we've already linked to it before, but there is a study that showed that the calcium in kale was more bioavailable than the calcium in milk. That means it's easier to absorb and it's easier for your body to use. And you are tending to get a lot of the other minerals which are also required for bone health, so like phosphorus and magnesium. And if you're, especially if you're getting fish, then you're also getting the great fat-soluble vitamins, vitamins A and vitamin D and vitamin K2. K2, your body makes, not your body, the bacteria that live in your gut make from eating green leafy vegetables. But those fat-soluble vitamins are also really important for bone health. So it's really just a question of eating some plants and some fish, and then you're good.
I think some people might think that their kids don't like fish, but I'm always surprised that whenever we serve fish, my kids go crazy for it. And even people might be surprised, but salmon roe is one of my kids' favorite foods. They'll like fight over it. So it's really good with eggs. You know, you could get a package of salmon roe for, you know.
It's one of the cheaper caviars you get.
Yeah. Like
it's...
You can get it at the Asian food market. I know they sell it at Whole Foods. You can get it a lot of different places. And you only have to put, like, a few, maybe eight, kind of sprinkled over top of eggs. And it gives it a nice salty flavor and goes with it. And if your kids are amenable, you could even saute some veggies in with that scramble and put the roe on top. And you've got yourself a super nutrient-dense breakfast. I know, you know, we've talked before, bone broth for breakfast is a good way to kind of get those nutrients in too. And that might surprise you, but a lot of kids like, you know, egg drop soup or butternut squash puree with some bone broth and make it into a kind of a sweeter soup that way. Geez, I bet if you made fish stock, it would be unbelievably healthful. So
yeah. Yeah, the bone broth is, it's really hard to find any kind of quantification about exactly the, you know, protein and vitamin and minerals contents of broth. And it's basically because it's highly dependent on exactly how you make it. So when you add a little bit of vinegar, you demineralize the bone more, so you get more of the minerals into the soup. The longer you boil your bones, typically the more you break them down and the more good stuff you get in your broth. So... but you know, it's everything you need because you're dissolving bone into water and then drinking the water. So it's a really great food for bone health.
Cool. I just want to state for the record, and after I say this, I'm sure one of my kids is going to fall from a tree or something. But I mean, I have three extremely active boys. Like that's an understatement. And, my oldest is turning 8 this summer, and we've never had a broken bone. So I don't really get concerned about calcium. Like, I just feel like, you know, they fall down and play rough so often that if their bones weren't super strong, something would have happened by now, you know?
Can I tell you a funny story that's, like, only slightly relevant?
Is it going to jinx me? Because I just...
No.
Okay.
So my youngest she's 3.5, like just turned 3.5 last week. And she has somehow figured out that a broken bone is a way of describing being hurt, but she doesn't have any kind of grasp of what it actually means. So she has started like, I lifted her off of a chair and put her down on the floor. And I guess I pinched underneath her arm a little bit or something like that by accident. She goes, "Ow, mommy, you broke my arm a little bit."
Oh.
And she's just been saying, like, it's come out like more and more and more, like a couple of times a day. Like, she'll be complaining that her sister like broke her ankle a little bit. And it's just, she'll like bang her thumb. "I broke my thumb a little bit." It's adorable. It's adorable.
Just a little bit broken.
Just a little bit broken. And then you'll go, "Oh, do you want me to kiss the bed?" And she'll be like, "No, I'm fine." And you're like, "Okay. Well, you go look after your little bit broken arm." It's cute. I just thought you'd appreciate the kid cuteness.
Yeah, I'm too whiny to appreciate kid cuteness unless it's a newborn baby.
I can't provide that.
I know. Such a problem right now.
Should we do some questions?
Yep, absolutely.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So our first question is from Christine from Livermore, California. And she writes, I've really enjoyed the mom perspective that you both bring to the podcast, as well as the informative Science with Sarah section. I'm a scientist myself. As moms shaping the diets and health of your families, I wondered if you could discuss any doubts you had along the way and how you dealt with them. While we are all losing extra pounds, my son is still struggling with eczema and depression/moodiness. I am learning all the time about how to heal him, but it's starting to feel a bit too random. Eating Primal has been a great change for us all, but now we are getting into other eliminations for him. Eggs and tomatoes are out for this month, and his face seems to be healing, but then his poor sleep patterns have reemerged. But maybe this has more to do with the current pollen count than what he is eating. The nutritionist says to add zinc and magnesium, or maybe more fermented cod liver oil would help. Maybe I should cut FODMAPs or go on a GAPS diet. How do you not make yourself crazy trying to sort out what is actually working, especially for your kids? While I feel comfortable with tweaks and trying supplements for myself, it feels rather irresponsible when trying them on another person, especially a child. Is that a can of worms?
Yeah. And frankly, Christine, I mean, I think what you're going to hear in this question is that we kind of feel the same way. I mean, I know for me personally, I've ended up putting Finn, my middle child, on a modified, what we'll call autoimmune protocol, but really it just means we limit his nightshades and try to encourage him to never eat tomatoes. Ketchup was really hard. It took, I don't know, a good 6 months before we finally convinced him he shouldn't eat ketchup anymore. Turns out we just had to come up with an alternative for him to love, and Russ from the Domestic Man, we stayed with him this weekend and we barbecued a couple of times and they could not believe how much mayonnaise he eats, but he basically has replaced his love of tomatoes with mayonnaise. And he just needed something else to dip his food in that he loved as much or more than tomatoes, and guacamole and mayonnaise does that trick for him. How do I know it's working? Well, with something like eczema, which is very similar, Finn has skin sensitivities, which is why he does not eat tomatoes. It should be pretty evident pretty quickly if you're making progress. However, it takes a long time for the gut to heal. So, if you're doing some of the things that we talk about on the show, like incorporating healthy meat and healthy fats into your diet, incorporating bone broth and fish, and trying to sleep more and do those sorts of things, as well as, you know, try to tighten the food as much as you can, you should, you know, see continuous significant progress over time. I totally understand what she's saying about feeling overwhelmed and not knowing what to do, and the zinc and the magnesium and the fermented cod liver oil and the FODMAPs and the GAPS. And I feel like removing FODMAPs and GAPS in a kid is something that really should be for, you know, extreme cases of gut dysbiosis or problems that are, you know, severely related to imbalanced gut health, because it's a lot to ask of a kid, and it's going to be really, really hard to keep 100%, which is what you really need for GAPS to be effective. So my suggestion would be to look into foods that have more zinc and magnesium. I do think, you know, I've been taking a magnesium supplement myself lately, and I feel really great taking it. And I do think it would perhaps help with sleep. But, you know, for a kid, I wouldn't put my kid on a supplement. I'd find specific foods that have those things in them and higher nutrient density and incorporate them into our diet more often. And I do think fermented cod liver oil is great. We've talked about it before on the show. I think it's an individual choice as to whether or not you think it's good for your kids. My family usually ends up only doing fermented cod liver oil for the kids if we realize we haven't had fish in a while, or if we think that the kids have been exposed to a bug or we're fighting colds or something like that.
Yeah, we pretty much only do it when my kids are getting sick.
Yeah. We don't give it to them every day. So I think I covered what I wanted to cover.
Yeah, I'm not sure I have too much to add. Eczema tends to go along with food sensitivities. I mean, this isn't true for everybody, but there's often a trigger food or foods, and a paleo diet by itself gets rid of a lot of things. But of course, they're primal, so I would definitely reevaluate dairy. So the top three major or like most likely foods to be a problem for someone with eczema are gluten, dairy, and eggs. And so I think she's kind of got the gluten and eggs down. But I would reevaluate dairy. And I think tomatoes, cutting out tomatoes is I think a good idea as well. So I think she's kind of already doing those things. Poor sleep could be that he's not getting enough food. It could be, like Stacey, you've already mentioned, the need for some more nutrient-dense foods. I also really don't like supplementing in kids, except for extreme circumstances. And I think, you know, part of that is that every vitamin and mineral has a range that is healthy. And too low is a problem, but too high is a problem. And there are some vitamins and minerals where what the optimal range is a moving target. Like, we still don't really know what the optimal range for vitamin D is. We don't really know. And Chris Kresser's been talking on it on his podcast lately about you know, new research that's maybe shifting the optimal vitamin D levels lower than what has been previously accepted. So I feel like the body is better at regulating how much, you know, what the status is of the vitamins and minerals, like how much of that is actually in our bodies when we get those from food. And part of that is because of the synergistic effects between vitamins and minerals, that when you have vitamin A and vitamin D together, vitamin A protects against vitamin D toxicity and vitamin D protects against vitamin A toxicity. So as long as you're getting them both together, which they're often packaged together in the same food, for example, you know, pastured organ meat or fish, then they, then you can consume quite a lot of them and not have toxic effects. But if you were to supplement with vitamin A or vitamin D, I mean, you can quite easily drive your vitamin A or vitamin D levels too high. And I think there's even less understood about what the optimal range is for vitamins and minerals in kids than there are for adults. So that's my sort of with supplements. I mean, if you're working with a really good functional medicine specialist who is monitoring very closely and doing, you know, appropriate testing, that's sort of a different thing. But if you're just trying to figure it out on your own at home, I would always recommend sticking with whole food sources and finding the foods that are richer sources of those vitamins or minerals that you're looking for. So, I mean, other things that we always talk about, sleep, stress management, spending time outside, those are also really important. And also what you might be putting on your son's skin. So having a look at soaps, detergents, any kind of moisturizers or sunscreens that you're using. Eczema is sort of the new understanding of eczema is that it's an outside-in disease rather than an inside-out. So that it actually starts with irritation to the skin, and there's probably a genetic predisposition that causes people to have this particular reaction, but that it's an irritation to the skin from something in the external environment that then the immune system gets revved up in response to, rather than like an autoimmune disease where, or even like an immune disease like asthma, where it's the immune system causing the issue, the immune system being overactivated and causing the issue. With eczema, they think that it's sort of loss of barrier function of the skin first. So looking at those things, maybe switching to like a probiotic soap, maybe, you know, switching to like natural fats for moisturizers. I've been using Vintage Traditions Body Balm. And what I do is I mix a little Tamanu oil into the jar, and I've been using that on my skin, and it's just been glorious. And I've got really sensitive skin. So having a look at those kinds of things might be helpful as well. But yes, it is very, very easy as a mom to go crazy trying to figure out what your child needs and what they're sensitive to. And we had a really, really hard time with my youngest. It turns out she's extremely sensitive to gluten and extremely sensitive to dairy, and allergic to tomatoes. And that we went through, we had had 3 sleep studies done at the Children's Hospital here to try and figure out the source of her sleep apnea. And it turns out that when we really, really got rid of, I mean, we were paleo, but I was letting the kids have some full fat dairy, and we had to get rid of the butter and the ghee. And that was when it stopped. And it was a 2-year process. So I really understand that frustration. So the only other thing I can recommend is some patience, because sometimes the missing ingredient is time. That was not a lot to add, right? Did I say I don't have a lot to add?
It's another good t-shirt. Sometimes the only missing ingredient is time.
That would be a good t-shirt. And then you could spell time like T-H-Y-M-E.
No.
Really dorky. No.
Then
don't
they wouldn't
that.
Understand
I mean,
that it was
true.
Actually.
No, sometimes it just takes time.
T-I-M-E. Okay.
So, all right, I'm tired. Melatonin. It's good stuff, but it's hard to work. All right. Our next question is from Sarah from New York. My son has eczema and gut issues since about 3 months. I guess since he was 3 months old. We started paleo around his first birthday this past January. Within 2 weeks, his stools were solid and he was eating a lot more food. I am just wondering how to get important fats into him. Eating paleo and raising both kids paleo seems right for our family. He is sensitive to foods and food allergy testing has not been done. Thanks for any advice for foods and fats that should be crucial to their diet for growing kids. He will not eat avocados. He loves meat, carrots, and berries. Help.
So I would say the best way to get in healthy fats, especially if he already loves meats, is to purchase high quality grass-fed and pastured meats. I know that our family doesn't really focus on specifically adding fats, just because my kids naturally fight over who gets to eat the chicken skin, and we like to do a lot of naturally fattier cuts of meat, like braised meat that's good for braising. We do a lot of soups and stews and sautés. We do, you know, pork fried cauliflower rice. We do a lot of pork in general, pulled pork, stuff like that that's just naturally has good healthy fats in it, and the kids always eat those. You know, there'll be a lot of information in Beyond Bacon about how to purchase whole animals. I mean, it's specific to pork, but if you're worried about affordability, purchasing like half a quarter cow or half hog or something like that with a friend can be a good way to get some affordable meat in there that can be pastured. Of course, I encourage you to render your own lard because it's amazingly delicious and super cheap and easy to do yourself. And then I would say cook in that. You know, you can cook with lard, you can cook with coconut oil, you can cook with tallow, palm oil, I think it's called red palm oil. These are all good, healthy, nutrient-dense, well, I don't want to say nutrient-dense, but these are good, stable, healthy cooking fats. And if you're sautéing your carrots or you're, you know, using that as the base for cooking all of your vegetables and meats and eggs and those sort of things, then they naturally get into the foods that you're eating.
And you already mentioned sort of mayonnaise as a dipping sauce.
Yes.
Making homemade mayonnaise with olive oil, avocado oil, macadamia nut oil. I mean, those are really good, healthy vegetable oils that are really high in monounsaturated fats. Walnut oil is also a very good high in oleic acid, which is a omega-9, which is actually a monounsaturated fat, but it gets the omega-9, which can be confusing. But it is a very important heart healthy fat that's really only just beginning to be understood how important it is. And they actually, some people are thinking that that's the reason why olive oil has so many health benefits. I mean, it's got great polyphenols and everything too, but they think it might be the oleic acid being the dominant mechanism behind olive oil's magicness. Lots of kids like olives. I mean, maybe trying some olives.
Black olives. And if you want them to eat avocados, you know, we have a recipe and Eat Like a Dinosaur for a chocolate milkshake that uses avocados and coconut milk. I mean, you can make immense amounts of smoothies
coconut. We didn't say coconut.
Yeah. I don't know why I missed coconut, but yeah. we do coconut milk smoothies with the kids a lot just because it's really filling for them. I mean, if you do frozen berries, a frozen banana, and some coconut milk in a blender, it's, you know, it's a pretty good balance of carbs and fats for them. If you, you know, wanted to add an egg yolk, you could, but even just as it is, I don't feel guilty about giving that to them, and that has a lot of good fats in it. That's one of those things when people say, my kids are hungry all the time, oh my gosh, I can't satisfy them. That's a really good thing to give your kids, because usually about halfway through a glass of straight coconut milk, they'll get full. So, salami is another.
Yeah, I mean, any kind of meat that you're buying, good quality meat, is going to be a great choice. And of course, fish, any kind of seafood. And like we've talked about before, my youngest will polish off an entire can of sardines on her own, like several times a week with no, like she'll go and get it out of the pantry and then ask me to open it. Like it's one of her favorite foods. So, you know, I think I always try and recommend not imposing your own likes and dislikes. I know it's hard, but not bringing those preconceived notions of a food being yummy or yucky to your kids, because their taste buds are quite a lot different than ours. And often things that we don't like, they'll love, especially when they're really nutrient-dense foods, because their bodies crave nutrition and they recognize nutrient-dense foods really easily. So the only other thing I have to say is, like, don't worry about it, because kids tend to eat what their bodies need. So if you're, I mean, it's tough with a, you know, a toddler now, right? Like he's just one. Is that right? Oh, so he shouldn't be in picky eater phase yet. Picky eater phase is like a whole other level of complication, but just put some healthy food in front of him and he'll probably eat the good stuff. Like he'll eat what his body needs, and don't worry too much about it.
Yeah. I get my healthy fats from dark chocolate and bacon.
My bacon consumption has increased pretty dramatically lately. And I'm okay with that.
Just kind of almost making a joke. One of those, you know,
not jokes at all.
One of those things that are funny, that's the truth, that we'll call a joke. No. All right.
So our next question is from Rachel, and she writes, "Hi there. We are big fans of your book and blog. We follow you on Twitter and Facebook as well. We have been about 90% paleo/primal for over a year now. Dear friends of ours who are about 60% paleo primal just had a baby a couple weeks ago and have had to eliminate many items from their diet as they had to do with their first child 1 year ago due to the same symptoms then too. She's currently breastfeeding and has had to eliminate all dairy, soy, and now eggs. She's afraid she needs to eliminate nuts too. The baby, again, just like their first, has blood in the stools and seems to have horrible stomach pains if she consumes, the mother, any of the above-mentioned items. As you are a mom and advocate of breastfeeding, I first thought to contact you for some guidance as well as some recipes that have worked for you, as I know you recently did some elimination diet stuff. Any help and direction you can provide would be fantastic."
Well, I would recommend that We have a ton of recipes on the website. I'm pretty sure they're under an autoimmune tag. We'll put them in the show notes. I know specifically I did an autoimmune friendly banana pucks recipe. I have a coconut macaroon recipe that doesn't actually include eggs. The chocolate chips are optional. If she probably shouldn't have chocolate either. I don't know. She's probably going to cry if you tell her that. But let's see what else. So, yes, I want to address specifically, though, the breastfeeding question. I'm a huge advocate of breastfeeding. I think we've talked about it on several shows. It might have even kind of covered similar topics that would be worth your friend listening to, because I personally had this problem with my babies. It's what brought me to paleo. So it's very common for sensitivities that the mother has to be transferred through to the breast milk of the baby. The mom probably doesn't realize that she herself is sensitive to all of these foods and that she's passing it along to the baby. So sadly, what the mom will need to realize is that she needs to work on healing her gut. And until then, even if she's not breastfeeding anymore, shouldn't eat the foods until she does do that healing, because it's ultimately affecting her system and not just the babies usually. So we've talked before about eggs. It might be possible, especially if she's, you know, breastfeeding and trying to get some good dense sources of food with good nutrient value, to keep egg yolks in and not whites. But she should definitely make sure that she's getting pastured, preferably soy-free, wheat-free eggs. And so all of our recipes on our site are going to be dairy-free. All of the recipes on our site are going to be soy-free. The only thing is egg-free. And I know for a fact that we have a tag on our website that is just for egg-free. So if she looked by egg-free recipes, she would see hundreds of recipes that she could eat. What I would recommend, though, is that, you know, the more she's able to leave out, the better. So going by that autoimmune tag on our site, and I'm sure, Sarah, you have one on your site as well.
Yeah.
We try to cover not just savory recipes, but also, you know, she's going to want treats. I remember what it was like breastfeeding. It's an opportunity to eat an extra 500 calories a day. You're hungry all the time. She's going to want some snack foods and stuff like that. And she can find those on both Sarah and I's site. Eat Like a Dinosaur will have some. Beyond Bacon has some. But ultimately, you know, if it were the fall, I would recommend you get the paleo approach, because that's going to be exclusively recipes that are compatible
and
with
her diet.
And there's
going to actually be a fairly good collection of sort of treats and those kinds of foods, because I, you know, firmly believe that you need to be able to have those from time to time. So there's going to be lots of good stuff in there.
Yeah. That's what I've got. I want to, you know, props to you, Rachel, for trying to help out your friend. Props to your friend for having the patience and kind of courage to give up those foods and focus on helping her baby. I know that that's tough. I've been through it myself. And, you know, in the long run, everyone benefits. So kudos and high five and all that jazz.
Yeah, it's funny because I don't remember ever hearing about these stories like when I was a kid, but it seems so common now to hear about these babies with, you know, mucusy or bloody stools that typically turn out to be, you know, most commonly dairy, soy, and wheat allergies in the mom. And I suppose it sort of reflects just how nutrient poor our diets are, maybe how many more problematic, you know, how much more pervasive those foods are in sort of the manufactured foods now, and how many more sort of problematic proteins there are in GMO foods. There's a lot going on there, but it's, you know, it's awful when you're watching a little baby with you know, such stomach pains and you know, very clear gastrointestinal distress. The only other thing that she might want to do while she's focus, you know, taking those problematic foods out and focusing on healing the gut is also maybe adding a probiotic, because that's going to benefit her and help her baby's gut heal, because they will be properly and appropriately filtered through her and then passed on through the breast milk to the baby. And that may help healing. And she can talk to her doctor or whatever healthcare professional she's working with and sort of figure out what the best option is to take for her.
Cool. Sounds good.
So one more?
Go for it.
All right, our last question for today is from Marcy. And Marcy writes, "Hi, Stacey." This one's just for you, so I don't have to answer it at all.
Well, the last one said that they like your book, so...
Yeah, no, that was, I think, actually like a direct question to you guys that you sent along to the podcast for us to address. Okay, from Marcy. Thanks so much for all the wonderful information you provide, and I am really enjoying the podcasts. I have a couple of questions. I have a 13-and-a-half-month-old daughter. She's still nursing morning bedtime and waking up once during the night to nurse. I'm contemplating weaning her as we are ready to start trying for another baby. I see a few reasons to wean and a few reasons not to. I am struggling with her not sleeping through the night. Not sure if it is teeth, foods, etc. She has never had any milk. I have recently started implementing a paleo diet. She has never had milk or wheat except through nursing from me. I don't have access to raw milk, so I'm currently not offering her any milk other than breast milk. Is this okay? I know there are a lot of opinions on this topic. I have some issues with low thyroid. My TSH is normal, but my T4, T3 ratio is very low. I have many hyperthyroid symptoms. She must mean hypothyroid symptoms. I know I read in Practical Paleo that I shouldn't consume cabbage, sauerkraut. My daughter and I both take probiotics, but I have read that some probiotics contain soil-based organisms, and that is apparently bad. Do you take a probiotic or only eat probiotic-rich foods? What can I consume to get my probiotics from food if I shouldn't eat sauerkraut? I have dealt with yeast with me and my daughter with breastfeeding. Are there doctors you can recommend that would be able to work with me long distance on the thyroid issue and yeast? Thanks again for your help." Did we start with a can of worms and we're going to finish with a can of worms?
I'm going to start off by saying I think Chris Kresser is taking patients again. So I would highly recommend that she maybe check out working with Chris Kresser. You're going to sum that one up?
We already know that I heart Chris Kresser. Yes. How could you? You couldn't do better. I didn't know that he was. If he's not, though, he may have a recommendation for her. But he does work with clients long distance, so he would be a good option.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So I guess if Marcy's asking my opinion, I don't think that children should ever be weaned. I believe in something called self-weaning, where children, usually somewhere around the 18 months to 2 years mark, it ends up happening for most people, but sometimes it can happen anywhere from 3 to 6 years, depending on, you know, the comfort level of the parent and the needs of the child. So I would say that it sounds to me a bit too early. And if the child were weaning themselves, I wouldn't so much be freaking out, because it is over a year old. And so their immune system is stronger, except that she's saying that she's thinking about weaning. So my personal opinion is, just from a parenting standpoint, as well as a health standpoint, I think going the self-weaning route can be the best for all parties involved. Less tears, less pain for mom trying to...
And you don't need to wean to get pregnant or to have a healthy pregnancy. Like, that's sort of one of those urban myths, that the only way to get pregnant is to wean your older child, or that you can't kid. And
if she doesn't have her period, then it would be difficult.
That's true.
And
weaning isn't necessarily a guarantee it's going to, you know, may, but...
Yeah. So usually if you're trying to get your period back and you haven't had it back yet,
some of the ways to do that without necessarily full-on weaning would be, for example, night weaning. I think a 13, 14-month-old, it would be perfectly reasonable to think that they could sleep most of the way through the night without needing to nurse multiple times. So I don't, know what your situation is and what the nursing cycles are, but I would say that it would be appropriate to kind of, in the middle of the night, if the baby wakes up, rather than bringing baby to bed and nursing, perhaps offering some water to drink in a cup or however you normally do that. I don't give bottles to babies. That's something we chose to never do, except if it were breast milk. So I would recommend, for other reasons, also for teeth health, to not do it in a bottle. But so that said, if you're trying to night wean, you can do that usually relatively easily, maybe just snuggling and cuddling and patting on the back and singing songs or, doing behaviors that are comforting and helpful for the baby to go back to sleep, because they shouldn't be hungry in the middle of the night at over a year old. So night weaning will usually bring back menstruation if it hasn't come back yet, because after several hours on a regular basis, your body realizes that the baby isn't regularly nursing anymore and stops using breastfeeding as essentially birth control. Your body's self-inflicting birth control. So that's what my recommendation would be in terms of trying to get pregnant. You can also, if you haven't lost your period though, like Sarah said, it's not mutually exclusive. You can definitely get pregnant and nurse. I did that, I think, with both Cole and Finn, although Finn might have been shorter, but I remember Cole being old enough to kind of tell me in his own way that the milk was drying out, but he still comfort nursed. And eventually he ended up weaning on his own, which might happen naturally, and that might be beneficial to both of you guys. But if the milk either does or doesn't dry out, oftentimes babies will nurse through. And then when new baby is born, moms can breastfeed both babies, called tandem nursing. If you're not comfortable with that, I'm not saying that you have to do that, but it is a possibility. They're not mutually exclusive. Or it might be worth just waiting a couple more months. I personally feel like I didn't want any of my babies to wean sooner than 18 months. I feel like for immune system and that sort of stuff, I really wanted to make it to 18 months for all of them. So that was my personal goal. Everybody has their own personal goals for their own reason, but that would be only a couple more months really to wait to have another baby. So, that said, I guess some of my other concerns have to do with, she's never had, milk or wheat except through nursing through a meat. Why is she having wheat if she knows that she has?
Well, said she just recently started implementing a paleo diet. So it sounds like she was implementing a paleo diet sort of after her daughter was born and nursing.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I don't think it doesn't sound like she's still doing that.
Okay. So I do know that there's baby probiotics out there, but I wouldn't do that. You can ferment lots of different things yourself. You can make, your own fermented vegetables. It doesn't have to be cabbage. I know in Practical Paleo, I think she's got a carrot recipe. If not, it must be on her site, because I know that she talks about alternatives to sauerkraut if you are avoiding FODMAPs for thyroid health. I know you can brew your own kombucha. If you do ever get access to milk and that's something that you want, you can make your own kefir. I think, is it Chris Kresser that has that? I mean, there's tons of kefir recipes.
Mark's Daily Apple does, and I do as well.
Okay. And yeah, you can make coconut milk yogurt with probiotics. I think we have a recipe on our site. Actually, it's a guest post by Spunky Coconut, but Spunky Coconut's got a ton of dairy-free recipes that are great to check out.
I'm umming a lot here. She says she's dealt with, there's just a lot of questions at the end, so I'm trying to make sure I read them all. She says that she's had,
yeast issues. Yeast. Sounds like thrush.
Yes, exactly what I was thinking too. I do know that we covered the topic of thrush on a previous breastfeeding podcast, but, reducing the sugar volume in your diet will help a lot with that. There are some natural ways to get rid of thrush if it's not so bad. Genetin Violet being one that worked for a lot of women I knew. It's really messy, but effective. You also need to make sure, especially if you're bottle feeding, that you're thoroughly disinfecting. I'm using quotation marks there. Your parts, essentially just making sure that you're steaming them at a high enough temperature to get to kill those bacteria. But ultimately with thrush, most women end up needing, by the time they realize that it's a problem, a prescription. I recommend Diflucan and Nystatin. Those are the ones that worked for me. Diflucan's a pill that you take, and Nystatin's a cream that you put on your skin if you have thrush on your breast.
The baby has thrush in her mouth.
Or the baby has thrush.
Oral. I had issues with thrush with both kids.
I think you also put the Nystatin on baby's butt if baby has a diaper rash from thrush too. So those are the two that I've personally used and I've had good, not good experience, but resolved the issues.
Better than having thrush experience.
Gosh, thrush is awful.
It is painful. I had it for, with my oldest, we passed it back and forth for 3 months.
I just had chronic, I know this is way TMI for our 13 male listeners, but I just had chronic yeast infections in general before I went paleo. And I don't know if that's necessarily SIBO or if that's just way too much sugar, but
it doesn't necessarily mean, I mean, some people think that if you have yeast growing topically, that means yeast growing internally. And that's not necessarily, not necessarily the case, but it certainly does mean way too much sugar.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things that even like, I didn't even know that my heels being cracked was actually a form of a yeast infection on my feet.
Fascinating.
And it's one of the things that like I still want pedicures, but I don't need pedicures anymore. And I'm pretty sure because I haven't had issues with yeast since I went paleo.
How many people just looked at the heels of their feet when you said that?
I know. I just went, all I need to do is cut down my sugar. Yep. That's what I'm saying. I don't know if that'll work for everyone, but it worked for me. All right.
I think I answered all those questions, did I not?
I'm going to jump in for a couple.
Okay.
So the first is, thyroid health. Low selenium is one of the number one, micronutrient deficiency that is associated with hyperthyroidism. So selenium-rich foods are really, seafood is your top choice. So I would definitely focus on dramatically increasing your intake of seafood. And seafood also has iodine, which of course is necessary for producing a pro-hormone, T4. So that's going to help with that as well. The other two micronutrient deficiencies that are often implicated in hypothyroidism or even hyperthyroidism are iron deficiency and zinc deficiency. You happen to get those from seafood too. So seafood is like my number one food to increase more of when you're dealing with, especially sort of borderline hyperthyroidism. You could go like full out autoimmune protocol, but I would just more focus on increasing seafood, maybe throwing in some liver once or twice a week, and making sure that you're eating lots of vegetables. I posted a teaser excerpt from the Paleo Approach. I spent like a couple straight weeks researching the issue of goitrogenic vegetables in the context of thyroid disorders because I really wanted to make sure that I was being very, very thorough for my book. And that felt like a really important topic to cover. And what I basically discovered was that there is actually no evidence supporting the removal of those foods in the diet
if your selenium and iodine status are good. So
fascinating. Look at you.
And in fact, including these cruciferous vegetables are the dominant ones that are implicated. So that's like cabbage and broccoli and cauliflower and Brussels sprouts and kale and all these like super nutrient dense foods. They're also sulfur rich, so they're really important for supporting liver function. And they also are some of the most potent anti-cancer vegetables available. So they're really, really important vegetables to have in our diet. So this is why I spent so much time researching this. So it turns out that actually the amount of the sort of goitrogenic chemicals that are in these foods at the level that humans normally eat, if your selenium and iodine status are normal, actually stimulates normal thyroid function. So so it's actually a really good food to keep in your diet. Again, provided selenium and iodine dietary intake is adequate. So eat some fish and then go ahead and go nuts on sauerkraut and get your, you know, 600 different strains of probiotic bacteria in one food. There's no supplement that can compete with that. However, I will also, she asked about specifically about soil-based organisms, and I will throw in a little plug. Soil-based organisms are getting more and more attention in the medical literature as being a really important part of the human health that is missing, especially since we became such indoor creatures and so fond of our disinfecting wipes. In prehistoric times, we would have been exposed to soil-based organisms constantly because we would be touching the soil. We'd be eating food without washing it. And it looks as though that may be one of the major differences between gut health in a hunter-gatherer, you know, farmer type person versus our, you know, modern Western convenience type people that we are. So so soil-based organisms are fantastic. There's sort of two ways to get them. One is to grow your own vegetables organically and eat them without washing them, or find a farmer who's local to you who grows organically and you really trust the quality of their soil and eat the vegetables without washing them. And the other is to take a soil-based probiotic. And I take Prescript Assist. I've been taking it for 9 months, I think, now. I don't plan on stopping. It's been really, really great. It's been very well validated in the medical literature in the context of irritable bowel syndrome, which I have, so it's good for me, or had before paleo anyway. And the concern, there is a couple other competing brands, and I think it would be fine to choose one of the competing brands. There was some concern a number of years ago about some of the strains that were in one of the other brands, and I cannot remember the other brand of, it's like one of the major brands of soil-based probiotics. There were a couple of strains that were then later found to be potentially pathogenic. Those strains were removed from all brands of soil-based organisms. So as long as you're not buying a bottle that's 10 years old, which I don't know how you would do that, those strains that were of concern are no longer in soil-based probiotics. So they're actually a really great probiotic to expose yourself to. And of course, just like when you eat a fermented vegetable, you're getting way more diversity of strains of bacteria. Just being out in nature and being close to good dirt that's not treated with chemicals that kills things. And again, like eating food grown in good soil without washing it, that's going to be your best source of probiotics. But when you're talking about healing your gut, I would recommend Prescript Assist. I've personally been taking it for a long time, and I think it's a really good supplement. And is it okay to not feed her daughter milk? Yes. We answered that. Yep. Yeah, we answered that in a previous podcast. I think we talked about not needing to introduce milk at a year.
And, you know, just to clarify, we've in that same vein, just like we talked about all the other dense sources of calcium-rich foods on the beginning of the show, usually that's what people's concern are. But if you're wondering what to replace milk with, which is the most common question I get, my answer is water. I mean, obviously you can give a child over a year old nut milk or coconut milk or something, but we only did that with the kids on like special occasions, because what we eat when we're having dinner and when we're having lunch, what our drink of choice is water. And so I think building that habit from an early age with a kid is good. You know, I think as a society, we've tend to forget or forgotten that our goal here is not to make highly palatable foods to convince children that this is what it should be, i.e. chicken nuggets and peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and macaroni and cheese. The kids' menus at restaurants are appalling. You know, I try to encourage people, even before it was paleo, we fed our kids what we ate. We gave them what we drank, because that's what served at the table, and we never had something separate for the kids. So I think the mentality of, what do I give my kid now that I'm no longer breastfeeding? Well, you need to make sure that she's getting nutrient-dense foods. We've talked before, liver is a really great food to give young children. It's a good texture for them, and they usually love it. One of those things, don't take your preconceived notions of what you like and taint your child. My children, we didn't eat liver with our first two children, but we actually gave it to them and they loved it, because it was just a really good nutrient-dense food. We knew that, and we wanted to give that to them as they started weaning from breast milk and had less of it. So we knew we wanted to give them kind of the best options for replacement. Egg yolks, all the foods Sarah talked about in the Science with Sarah segment, foods that you know are adding value to her when she is eating solid foods are the best choice and the best replacement for breast milk. Because what it should be is you're taking the calories and the fat and the protein that would have been in the breast milk, and you're then making sure that she's getting that in nutrient-dense sources with foods, and then augmenting her thirst with water. Whereas before, breast milk was a food source that was also quenching thirst. Now you're kind of separating that out into two groups. And that's why it takes a while, and while that's why I support the philosophy of baby-led weaning, because then babies are able to kind of decide on their own when they're getting enough nutrients from food that they themselves usually pull off of breastfeeding less and less. And I haven't really talked about it before on the show, but it's an interesting topic. I think that there might be something to be said for, you know, my youngest weaned the earliest, and I think it had something to do with the fact that his diet was the most nutrient dense of any of the kids. And I think it's also why some third world countries have the longest periods of breastfeeding, because they don't have as much nutrient dense options, and so they're getting those dense nutrients from their mother. So
that's interesting,
right?
Yeah.
So I think, for me personally, it's really important to let your children decide what they eat. Just like Sarah mentioned earlier, they know what their bodies crave. You know, you don't necessarily have to give them extra fat. If they're seeking fat, they will ask for foods that are naturally high in fat. And baby-led weaning is the first opportunity that your kid has to tell you what their needs are. And if you wean too early, she might not be getting the nutrients that she needs from the food that you're providing. So that's why I just was encouraging you to maybe wait a little longer and see if that can happen naturally. So, yeah, I'm a freak about breastfeeding. Even though I haven't breastfed in a couple of years, I'm still like constantly interested in thinking about it.
You're like a breastfeeding encyclopedia. Awesome.
Cool. I'm happy to contribute something to the show.
Oh, come on.
It's nice to know something a little more than you. Just a little bit.
I don't know computers.
Yeah, me neither. I have a dude for that. He has a beard, and he lives with me.
Funny, I have a bearded dude who lives with me who knows computers, too.
Aren't we lucky?
Interesting.
Our own little IT departments.
with beards.
Bearded IT men. Okay. That's a show.
Yeah. We have nothing apparently to add.
Good night, everyone. Or if this is your morning, have a wonderful day.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.